Hello and welcome to the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Radu Palamariu, Managing Director of Elkul Global. Our mission is to connect the supply chain ecosystem in Asia and globally by bringing forward the most interesting leaders in the industry. And it is my pleasure to have with us today Paul Harry Graham. Paul serves as Chief Supply Chain Officer at Woolworth Group, the largest supermarket chain in Australia. And prior to this, he was Global Chief Operating Officer and Chief Executive Officer for Europe, Middle East and Africa for DHL Supply Chain. Paul has also been a board member of one of Australia's largest wholesale and grower-produced companies, Lamana Group. He is Executive Chairman of a large multi-billion dollar marketing services business, Williams Lee Tag, and has served on various government and university-linked advisory boards. He has also been awarded the Public Service Medal by the Government of Singapore for services to the logistics industry. Paul, it's a pleasure to have you with us and thank you for taking the time today.
My pleasure, Eddie. Thank you.
So let's start maybe if you can tell us a little bit about your beginnings. I know that your career spans across many, many years. How did you start? How did you end up in supply chain in logistics? What's your story?
Yeah, interesting story. I left school, didn't go to university, took a summer job working in a company called Emery Air Freight at the time, and basically just helping out around the office in the days when we had telex machines, Radu. So I would sit in the morning and split the telexes down, one for the office manager, one for the filing cabinet, and one going to my supervisor at the time. And I enjoyed getting on the machine in the morning and talking to people all over the world and really found that exciting, and then really went from there into customer service, sales, operations, and the rest, they say, is history. But I like the people aspect of it. I like the service aspect of it. And I really enjoyed the fact that, we were helping people and dealing with, companies on a global basis.
Yes. Wow, fascinating. I mean, because originally, I'll probe just a little bit further, because I know that your background is extremely diverse and also extremely international. So you're by birth, you're from Northern Ireland, and then you spent time pretty much all over the place, right? So you were in Europe, you were in Asia for many, many years. Now you're in Australia. How did you also end up working in all these places, in all these continents? Was there a storyline to it?
Yeah, there was no master plan. As I said, I ended up in the industry sort of by default. Really loved the people aspect of it. Loved the fact that, talking to different people around the world. I came to Australia as a migrant, typical sort of migrant in the early days, leaving what was then a pretty troubled Northern Ireland. And I guess my father was in the armed forces. So I spent the first 3 years of my life living in Malta and where he was based. And then we moved around. So I guess the moving aspect of it, I don't know how many times I've moved now. My wife can probably tell you better. But it became an aspect that's always been part of my career. And it primarily was around the fact that it was an interesting people and an interesting cultures, and really wanting to, assimilate myself with parts of the world. And I still have that interest, and it's been a great part of my career, that ability to, travel the world and work in many different geographies with some wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. And also you have this... This part, it's also you have a very interesting background in a sense that you've seen both sides of the coin, or what many people in the industry consider both sides of the coin. You've been for many years with DHL, which is a leader in the logistics side, and you've had significant experience now with Woolworth and with other boards that you're sitting on, also on the supply chain, on the retail side, on that side of the business. So you kind of have both. And one question that we got from one of our listeners who comes from the 3PL side, and he was curious what would be three nuggets, maybe from a project or process or type of people perspective, it doesn't matter, that you took from the 3PL side to the client side and made a lot of difference.
Yeah, good question. Having spent large part of my career, as you say, on the 3PL side, dealing with many, many different industries in different stages of development and transformation and different challenges, I think it's interesting to understand the dynamics and the speed in retail, particularly at the moment. The industry is going through revolutionary change in terms of the demands that customers have, the speed at which we need to move to satisfy those demands. And I think what it highlighted is that, on the 3PL side, we have many skill sets that are applicable to many different industries. And I was able to identify that, it's important that we don't just think in a structured, this is a retailer, therefore I'll apply our retail solutions to this. There are different solutions that really come to play in that. So if you look at now online shopping and the speed at which you need to pick an order and meet that type of urgency, there's not a lot of difference in that between picking an urgent spare part for a computer that's broken down and trying to get that to an engineer to fix as well. So I think we can apply a number of skill sets that come from the diversity that 3PL deals with to problem solving for retailers or for others. I think the other side is to understand that, a customer doesn't really want your margin in the 3PL side. What they want is for you to get rid of your inefficiency. And I think we need to be much more vocal on both sides of the fence to call out the practices and processes that drive inefficiency for both parties. And I think sometimes it's either a subservient relationship or we tie ourselves up in contracts so much that we get away from actually exploring opportunities that will drive out cost and improve efficiency. And I think the 3PL still sometimes look at any of those actions as a means of the customer trying to reduce their margin. I think the customer recognizes you need to make money and should be satisfied the fact that you're making money. What they want is your inefficiency.
And in terms of the, you mentioned speed and you mentioned the, well, the pretty much the retail world is changed or has been changed dramatically from the emergence and the constant growth of e-commerce. Do you have a supply chain strategy? I mean, I'm sure you do actually, but what is the supply chain strategy of Woolworth when it comes to countering maybe the competition from e-commerce players?
Yeah, I mean, in the food business, probably slightly different from the general merchandising business. But, you mentioned there about the change in consumer habits, customers shopping now 7 days a week, customers wanting to receive product, delivered to their home within a 2-hour window or 1-hour window, wanting to use, their browser and the internet to validate, what specials are on, what products are available. And really have a very low tolerance rate of the fact that you don't have a product in stock, particularly if it's a product that's on promotion, or that the quality of your product is not up to their expectations. So, where we may have had in the past more static supply chains, large, DCs running to a, fairly regulated schedule, whilst that's still critically important and moves the vast majority of the volume, the online business is requiring a very different mindset and a very different supply chain. Clients, are becoming less and less tolerant of service failure. They're becoming less tolerant of, product not being to the quality they expect. And I think all of that, puts substantial pressure on supply chain and the ability that we need to have to be much more nimble and much more agile. I take the sort of analogy that, if you take the old days of the airlines where you had national carriers and they ran to a schedule, then they had a price and that's what you had to pay and you had to go with their schedule. And then the budget carriers came in and really changed the nature of how we fly and really saw the value in standardization and reducing waste and getting quick turnaround time, et cetera, et cetera. The retail and consumer landscape is going through that change as well. No longer does the customer have to be, pushed into a certain format and a certain way of shopping. They can do what they want to do from the comfort of the lounge room at home. And that creates significant new challenges, but also exciting challenges, I think, for supply chain. And that's also, you know, Radu, why we've seen supply chain now really become a much more prominent factor in business, particularly retail businesses, because people recognize that you can have the best merchandiser, the best buyer, have the best promotion plan. But if that product's not available, then, you know, customers have significant choice these days and they will take their business elsewhere. So we're seeing supply chain now, you know, in the role of chief supply chain officers or whatever they may be called, really being a much more critical part of the overall, you know, business strategy, rather than being seen as a service arm that comes in after the event. It's now, you know, becoming, you know, front and center of the ability to actually enable a strategy to be successful, and particularly around retail.
No, absolutely. And I mean, the fundamental changes that whereas before, maybe in order to compare prices and whatever it may be as consumers and as all of us, maybe you had to go to two shops. Now you can do it in a living room, basically with the convenience of your phone and browsing the web. So that makes it a lot easier. And it also comes with a huge set of challenges for the retailers and for everybody selling things, pretty much, because consumers' expectations have increased dramatically, and it must be quite a challenge also in terms of differentiating yourselves, right? So if I'm another question that we got, right, in terms of, you know, you need to, at Woolworths in Australia, you need to differentiate yourselves from the other retailers. That's one, but you also need to and I mean, I think Amazon has a pretty strong presence in Australia, and there's other e-commerce and delivery sites that are present there. How do you differentiate, and how also do you leverage? Because obviously, being the largest supermarket chain, you have advantages in terms of scale and in terms of network. So how do you set yourself apart, if I may ask?
Look, it remains a challenge, I think, for all retailers. You know, for us, it's about the customer experience. It's about putting our team in the stores first and making sure that they have all the tools and support that they need to create the best customer experience in store. Obviously, having a range of products that are, attractive to the customer, that meet the needs of those customers, be it in a certain demographic area, a certain ethnic area, and having, a range that suits their personal needs as well as the broader community needs. And also, I think, being seen as a positive contributor, to the community and to society. We are, present in every community around the country, and we take, very seriously the responsibility we have to serving those communities. We employ a lot of people in those communities, and looking at, how do we use, products from those communities. So it is about, culture and the experience that the customer has when they come into the store or shop online. And within, supply chain, it's creating the framework to enable our stores to provide, the very best service, making sure they've got the perfect order delivered to them, obviously in the safest way possible, and making, life simpler for them so that they can spend their time serving customers, making sure that the product, looks great and the stocks are available. But it's a constant day-to-day challenge. And as the habits of retailers change and consumers change, and we see demographic changes, and we see, a focus on healthier food or, more vegan type of requirements, then all those things need to be satisfied. And dovetailed into the overall plan. And as I say, when they do that, there is always a ripple effect that goes through supply chain, right the way through, obviously to the supplier themselves.
Mm. And this also has to do a lot with being able and close to, and being able to monitor the customer trends, and being close to the customer needs. It has a lot to do with technology. And pretty much we've seen huge changes and transformations that are being in, are, that are ongoing and being enabled because of technology nowadays in supply chain. And one question that we got, which is a very good one, is how do you see in general the role of technology, right, in supply chain? And do you see, you know, things like, I don't know, machine learning or Internet of Things, big data, in terms of how do you see it in terms of transforming and helping you with your supply chain operations?
Yeah, look, my belief now is that, you know, we've sort of reached a tipping point. I think now that the movement of data is actually more important than the physical movement of goods. You know, if you can provide the right information from a trusted source, where the, you know, either the end customer, the supplier, the transporter, the shipping line, the 3PL, that we can all look at that same single source of data, and we know that that data is accurate. That allows us to make you know, far better decisions, even where it relates to a customer experience that is maybe disappointing because the delivery is late. But if they trust that data and it says, okay, we will be 30 minutes late, then you can actually turn that experience into a more positive one, because they know over time that the information you're giving them is accurate. So the world of big data is upon us. How we assimilate and use that data is absolutely critical, both in terms of making better decisions, not just decisions based on reactive situations where we know something's gone wrong, but also big data in terms of looking at proactive changes. So, you know, knowing that a weather front is coming in and could cause traffic disruption, and then using predictive analytics to estimate what that will do to the road network and how you then change your delivery schedules to accommodate that. Having, you know, predictive analytics and big data, looking at, you know, historical forecasting and overlaying that to future forecasting, and how you then manage your, you know, your volume flows through your network. So we are in the age of big data. The challenge we have is that we have many stakeholders involved, and what we need to do is continue to collaborate. We need to continue to develop applications in open language, and build our APIs and our integration tools so that it makes it easier for a collaboration. And then we have to make sure that we've got obviously the right security to protect the data. And then use that, you know, proactively to make better decisions and to take out waste and to improve customer service. So, say, I think we've reached the tipping point where, you know, the movement of that data end to end, be it from the supplier, you know, overseas, right the way through to the last mile delivery, you know, that is more critical now than the physical movement. And I think you know, that creates more challenges for supply chain, because all our you know, dirty laundry is out there in the open for everyone to see, but it should also force us to collaborate more and to work much closer on removing the bottlenecks or the challenges that are in place for delivering that perfect customer experience.
Mm. And maybe if you can if you can share, because I think there's a lot of value into practical examples, and I know that you've done a lot in Woolworth as well as in DHL. So actually one of the questions that is we got is one of the listeners asked if you can tell us one example of a technology innovation that was implemented at in the Woolworth supply chain over the last 1-2 years that made a big difference for you guys. And why did it make a big difference?
Yeah, I think we're no different to any other retailer continuing to look for opportunities to use technology well. You know, we've really put a lot of effort into creating, you know, better visibility around, you know, where our product is, around, you know, the temperature control of that product, and then using that data to, you know, help us streamline our planning processes so that we are able to get better utilization of our vehicles and create a higher degree of predictability in terms of the service schedule. So we've been investing in that sort of end-to-end visibility platform, working with our carrier partners, working with technology partners as well to create a suite of tools that allows us to get that visibility and to start pushing that data into cloud-based platform that allows us to then use that data in a meaningful way, whether that be for our stores or whether it be for our supplier base, to ensure that everyone has the right data available to help them manage their respective area of the business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in terms of the technology and the IT competencies, right? In terms of the IT domain, do you prefer to build it in house? Is it better to build it in house? Is it better to outsource it? Is it a case by case type of a scenario?
Yeah, it's case by case. I think where a lot of companies in the past would have their own infrastructure in house and things were built in house. I think all industries have moved away from that. That we obviously have cloud-based computing now. We have large technology providers. We have small startups. We have companies in the middle. So there are a whole range of different providers out there. And I think it is a horses for courses approach. For me, the key things are that it has to fit into the long-term ecosystem. It has to be sustainable. And I think one of the challenges we have today is that, technology is moving so rapidly. How do you, provide comfort to, your business that, the application landscape that you're on, the architecture you're creating is going to create that, sustainable platform for success. And I think, all companies are going through that journey. I think it is an exciting journey in many ways because of the innovation that we're seeing and the rapid movement of technology. At the same time, it provides challenges because we are moving away from, what has been a fairly historical way of looking at, how technology gets managed within a business.
Mm. And we've also seen, over time, and it's without naming anybody, but there's been a few instances where big internal implementations have not worked that well, and then companies have opted out for external ones, and the other way around as well. But also what there seems to be almost a trend as well as in terms of building really solid partnerships, right? So obviously, let's say Woolworth, you have a very solid scale and a very solid footprint in the market, and you're partnering with maybe more nimble, but startup entrepreneurial type of a company, and you give them access to your scale, and at the same time, they might offer you a value in terms of them thinking a little bit out of the box in terms of how to do things that can work well as a synchronicity. I was talking the other day to a port in Europe, and they're doing all sorts of things. They basically allocated a part of the port just for startups to experiment different things and different products and different services that they could offer as extension to the port. So it's interesting how this kind of plays out in the current context as well, this kind of symbiosis between large companies and startups and trying to trying to help each other. So I don't know if you've also explored something along those lines yet or not.
Yeah, look, we have. I mean, everybody's looking for that sort of secret sauce to create differentiation. I think, as I said before, collaboration is going to be a key part of any future strategy, particularly around supply chain. Created a business called Woolies X that is looking at partnerships, looking at what we can do around innovation as well as developing great ideas that we have from our own team. I think this is the way of the future. I think there's clear recognition from most businesses now that this sort of stand alone on an island and do everything yourself, and that you've got the the best answers to all the problems is absolutely, clearly recognized not to be the way forward. And I think, having collaboration, having a clear mindset as to what your overall strategy is, but also clear recognition that you're going to need your business partners, suppliers, customers, a whole bunch of different areas helping continue to shape and develop that, including looking at, you know, partnerships in the technology space, in format development, a whole bunch of other areas. And I think, you know, that contributes to a better experience overall for the customer, and allows you to keep pace with, you know, what is the rapidly, you know, developing changes that are occurring in technology and consumer habits.
And I wanted to ask you also about one hot topic, and it's particularly hot in Australia, but to be honest, it's kind of spreading all over, which is the automation piece and the warehouse automation piece. How do you see the trends, may it be Australia, may it be the rest of the world, maybe China, in terms of automation, in terms of, obviously, there's a big challenge around blue collar workers and not having the workforce sometimes to operate these warehouses. Overall, how do you see the next couple of years unfolding when it comes to this?
Yeah, look, we are in the age of automation, and that's not just automation within, you know, warehouses and supply chain. You know, if you go to an airport now and check in, you know, invariably you're not speaking to anybody. It's a machine. You're tapping in your name, and you know, that prints the boarding pass. If you go through passport control now, again, you're dealing with automation. So, you know, many aspects of our daily lives now are touched by some degree of automation. Be it, you know, tapping your phone for Apple Pay versus, you know, pulling out a credit card or pulling out, you know, actual hard currency. So, I think, you know, it's impacting many areas of our life, and obviously in the supply chain, it is also impacting. It's not just about labor and automating the labor. It is, as you say, in many markets, the availability of labor now and in the future will also be challenged. But it's also very much to improve the quality of the experience for the customer. So making sure that we are picking that perfect order, making sure those pallets are stacked safely, that we're able to deliver the product to the store so that the store can get that product onto the shelf in the safest, most efficient way. So automation is not focused on addressing, you know, one area. It's focused on addressing many areas. And like, you know, all technologies, it's moving at a rapid pace. And I think, you know, we'll continue to see substantial growth in automation inside the warehouse, also in many areas of our daily lives, in the back of store, in vehicles, a whole bunch of stuff. So I think it is upon us. And the key to that, I think, is making sure that, we're clear on why automation is the right solution. And as I say, it's a multifaceted rationale rather than just, one aspect of it.
And one of the lowest hanging fruits also, since we're on the topic of automation. And there's been a huge increase, I think, in most companies using in one way, shape or form is the RPA model, right? That robotic process automation to basically look at their back-end processes and also try to streamline those a lot. So I'm actually very proud because one Romanian company is the leader in that. Well, they started in Romania, now they're headquartered in New York. You might know the UiPath. So they've done some very good things around RPA. And as you rightfully said, I mean, automation is upon us. Big data is upon us. So it's just a matter of how to adapt, best integrate it. And this kind of leads me to also to the question, and it's a pretty specific question, but I think it's important to address it because it kind of gives a glimpse into into what retailers are having to face, to be faced with. Because on the one side, you have to rationalize SKUs to limit the complexity, or another side, you have to potentially move away from this seasonal model to a constant supply chain model, ideally that doesn't need to replenish. But of course, there's seasonal products and there's non-seasonal products, right? So non-seasonal, like, I don't know, dog food, or highly seasonal like mangoes. So the question went to the, somewhere along the lines like, there's products that don't fit any of these categories, right? So disclosing the general merchandise. How do you plan for them at Woolworth, and how do you best, you know, maximize a little bit in terms of your supply chain operations around it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, as I said before, you know, where we would have sort of very fixed seasons and very fixed customer offerings, and, you know, not just us, but all retailers, now, you know, consumers recognize they have significant choice. They are very demanding. You know, weather patterns are changing. Fashion is changing rapidly. You know, the days where you would launch a summer range and that was it, that was fixed. You know, now people can go and buy the summer range in winter from another geography. You know, all those challenges create, you know, further challenges in supply chain. I think it also gets back to using big data and using those trends and the data that we get from, you know, our customers around what we need to have in the store or available online to them. I think, you know, we're also moving from a, you know, a sort of static, traditional, you know, sort of supply chain into a much more rapid express-like supply chain. So if you take an express hub network versus, say, a traditional full truck, you know, large-scale distribution network, we are seeing the blending of those two networks. So, you know, we're having to have certain characteristics that look and feel like an express network with the rapid, you know, replenishment, you know, clipping fresh food, small format stores, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner three times a day. At the same time, trying to fulfill, you know, that more traditional large store format that has a winter range, a summer range, has, you know, a range of permanent SKUs that are always available. So I think, you know, nothing is constant anymore. It is about reacting to customer demand. That customer demand continues to change every single day. And therefore, our nimbleness and agility as a supply chain, using data to help make decisions, but also having people who have a mindset that can have that adaptability, that are not fixed in a certain way of working. And at the same time, you know, looking at how we create that flexibility and agility within a network that has been built with large scale assets that don't have rubber walls. So how do you flex that static network in a way that allows you to respond to those customer needs, but also to respond in a way that drives efficiency and is economical?
And to top it off, just to increase the complexity, apart from consumers changing their minds and constantly changing their behavior, nowadays we seem to have a lot of trade wars also going on. So that is there just to add one more element to make sure that supply chains really need to be flexible and you know try to be adaptable to anything that could happen in the ideal case.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because you know we are in a world of change, both, you know, geopolitical change, you know, weather events, etc. And therefore, you know, having the plan B in place, you know, what if I can't source from this place anymore? What if a major weather event prevents me from getting that product in? You know, what is your plan B? And how do you activate that? And again, I think that is having the right skill sets within your organization. You can build those plans and have those plans constantly updated. At the same time, you know, using technology and the partnerships you have with suppliers and others to communicate those changes and implement those changes rapidly.
Mm. And one other hot topic on the agenda is and sometimes it's literally hot, it's climate change, right? So it's a lot of people are being very concerned about it, and for good reasons. So the question that we got is also, what type of sustainability strategies will you or have you already implemented in your supply chain in Woolworth to try to address this?
Again, you know, it is one of the trends that we've seen for some time now, is obviously customers, consumers, you know, societies continue to be concerned about climate change and sustainability. You know, we want to ensure that we are responding to society's challenges around that. We were the first company to remove plastic bags in Australia, for example. So we see ourselves very much wanting to establish best practice when it comes to that. Food waste is a huge challenge globally. And again, I think it is working in a collaborative sense with your supplier base, with your end customers, to look at ways that we can create greater efficiency, to look at ways that we can reduce food waste, that we can take kilometers out of the network to reduce the amount of travel time that trucks spend on roads. So I think it is there's no quick answers to this, but it is about having a very strong commitment as an organization, as a community, as a society, from the board of directors right the way through to every team member, and looking at ways that in our daily lives we can do something that will overall improve the environment we live in. We're also seeing investors take a far stronger approach to investing in companies that they believe have committed to a sustainable agenda, and that's going to change the landscape. If there are funds and investors who will look to only invest their capital in companies that they believe are fulfilling a strong sustainability agenda, then that will continue to change the way companies deal. But I think it starts with having a genuine commitment to do the right thing and to work end-to-end to explore opportunities that will help drive a much more sustainable future.
And you talked a lot, and we talked a lot during the podcast about customer experience and how supply chain is there actually to make sure that the customer, the customer is satisfied, and pretty much any business is and should be in the focus area of satisfying the customers. But this question is a little bit different in the sense that how do you almost select and make sure that also your suppliers, the people that you work with, they are the ones appropriate to help you in this journey of ensuring your customer experience is a great one? And what are some of the key things to take into consideration when you're kind of selecting A versus B?
I think it starts with that common commitment. We all like to deal in our daily relationships and our family relationships with people who share the same values that we have. And I think it starts with looking at suppliers who've got the same commitment, who share the same values around giving the customer a fantastic experience, doing that in a way that minimizes our carbon footprint and commitment to sustainable products. I think that's the most important thing. And then being very open to work on innovation. What can we do around packaging? What can we do around supply chain? What can we do about reuse or waste? And where there is waste, then inevitably, that's going to occur, particularly in fresh food. How do you then partner with community organizations who can still use that product to ensure that people who are disadvantaged have access to fresh and available food? So I think it is taking an end-to-end view, starting with common values and a common commitment is critical, making sure that there's a process in place to constantly look at how you're refining the product to ensure it meets customer needs in all aspects, look, taste, nutrition, as well as, the way it's made and the packaging it comes in, is it as sustainable as possible? And then when you do have areas of waste, how do you still get value out of that product to society rather than it going into landfill?
Yeah. And what would you see in terms of the next 5 to 10 years ahead of us? What would you see as some of the key challenges in supply chains, globally, and some of the biggest, let's say, biggest headaches for chief supply chain officers to manage with?
Yeah, look, the trend, obviously, we talked today about big data and the sheer volume of data that we're going to have to deal with. How do we deal with that in a way that allows us to break it down into its component parts to provide the data to the many, many stakeholders in the end-to-end supply chain that's relevant to them and allows them to make better decisions? That's certainly going to be a significant challenge and one that's already upon us. I think the rapid speed of supply chain, customers now shop in a global world. They're sitting on their sofa with their mobile device in their hand, and they're looking at a global, endless aisle of product. And they firmly believe that by hitting that button, that product will magically appear in their doorstep in the shortest time frame possible. And really, that could come from, tens of thousands of kilometers away. It could come from just around the corner. The consumer actually doesn't really care. So I think, those increasing consumer demands and the service criteria that goes with them, we're going to have to get, as I said before, much more nimble, much more agile, much more collaborative end-to-end to ensure that we're maximizing, not just the efficiencies of our supply chain, but also the efficiencies of others. I think the third challenge is going to be the hunt for talent. We are looking at different skill sets in supply chain, skill sets around big data, skill sets around automation, skill sets around strategic planning, around how we knit together collaboration and partnerships. And these are going to bring challenges as well as opportunities. I think, having spent my whole career in supply chain, it's an incredibly exciting time to be in the supply chain industry. If you're interested in technology, we're doing some incredibly exciting things in our industry around, technology. If you're interested in automation, robotics, we're doing some incredibly exciting things. If you're looking at wanting to shape a customer experience and have a profile within an organization that is critical to enabling that, then again, it's an exciting time to be in supply chain. So I think the hunt for talent and continuing to develop, core operational skill sets, as well as some of those more intricate skill sets around technology, automation, planning, predictive analytics. I think that's going to be a challenge, but also an exciting opportunity for people who want a really exciting, and as I've shown, a global career.
Yes, and interesting that you mentioned talent. Of course, I'm always happy because it's our business. But talent is probably, and the human capital side of things is probably a recurring topic in terms of, and it's also interestingly enough, at most conferences, usually people talk a lot about the technology side, but they kind of forget that without people, you can't really do anything with the technology. I wanted to ask you, where do you see currently the gaps? And you spoke about big data, you spoke about different technology skills, but where do you see the gap and the biggest challenge? So let's say when you're recruiting or your team is recruiting for talent, where's the hardest type of hard skills and maybe hard skills and soft skills to find to take your supply chain to the next level currently, right? What's the hardest type of skills to get?
Yeah, we're in an interesting time because we are moving from a supply chain that's been in place for the last, 15, 20 years, fairly manual in its operations, into one that's now being driven far more by technology, moving into automation, a far more rapid and fluid supply chain. So it is a challenging time to look for talent because you're looking at these new skill sets around, big data, around analytics, around automation, integrating partnerships and collaboration. At the same time, core operational skills are also critically important. You still have to load that vehicle. That vehicle still has to go get out of that depot safely and still has to reach its destination in time and deliver the products in the perfect order. So, trying to find people who've got that operational experience, but are also attuned to the future and around the importance that data plays and analytics play, and been able to transcend that journey, are very, very difficult to find. And we've got to be careful that, we don't just look at the new roles and, the use of data and, automation without recognizing the fact that, core operational disciplines are still at the very heart of supply chain. I started my career in the freight forwarding business and, transcended into being in the, logistics business and see myself as a, sort of end-to-end supply chain expert. And people have asked me what is the difference between the freight forwarding business and the supply chain business. And I said, in the freight forwarding business, you're like an artist. You get a blank canvas today. You paint that canvas as best you can, but then you have to sell it for as much as you can get. That canvas, goes away, goes on that plane or on that ship, and it's lost, and you start again from scratch. Whereas obviously supply chain is an incremental day-to-day improvement, that process engineering. So I think the great thing is we need all types of skills in supply chain these days. It is an exciting place to be, and we've got to continue to make our industry attractive to people. And whilst we are focusing on the new skills that are required and going to be increasingly required going forward, we still have to anchor ourselves on the fact that it's about day-to-day operational execution that is still critically important to satisfying our customers.
Hmm. And I'd like to also ask you, and kind of as we're drawing close to an end, but I'd like to also to ask you, because you've had a long, long career. If you were to look back and if you were to share maybe for people that are just starting or they're just graduating, what would be some pieces of advice that you have received maybe that have been most helpful to you and that you would want to share, for somebody that wants to become one day a chief supply chain officer or a CEO of a company?
The most important thing to me, and the reason that I love this business, is it's a people business. Always be conscious of being able to relate to people, particularly, frontline team members who are out there doing the hard yards every day in the warehouse or on the road. Always understand that, your number one responsibility is to obviously keep them safe, but also to take feedback from all areas of the business. Get out of your office and get into the field constantly to get that feedback, because you can easily get yourself in a sort of ivory tower situation and lose touch. I think the other great thing is to be constantly curious, to constantly challenge, why can't we do that better? To be interested in people and cultures, particularly if you're fortunate enough, like I was and am, to have a job that allows me to travel globally. When I used to travel to various geographies, I'd always read up on the gossip columns and the sporting columns about what was happening, and people asked me why. So it gives me an immediate connection point. If I'm going into India, I can talk about the latest Bollywood movie or that the Indian cricket captain just scored a century. One, because I'm interested in their culture and them as people, and it gives you a connection point. So have that curiosity towards cultures and towards people. And I think the other thing is constantly challenge yourself to keep learning. As I said at the beginning, I started off splitting telexes with a telex machine and thought that was, incredibly wonderful for a young kid who came out of Belfast and lived in a house that didn't even own a telephone. To now, obviously, we're making multi-million dollar decisions on the end of a mobile. That change is being significant. And I challenge myself every day to learn and to develop and to take feedback from others. I think the last thing would be to ensure that, you're humble. I think, living in Asia taught me a lot of things, but, humility and making sure you spend time to listen and respect everyone's view, I think it's a great characteristic for anybody to have in any aspect of life.
Super. No, thanks for sharing, Paul. And definitely all very relevant and top points. And also thank you for all the case studies and the good information that you shared with us, and examples of things that you're doing and you're seeing and you're observing in terms of what's developing in supply chains, whether it is at a global stage, at a regional stage in Australia. So many, many thanks. Thanks for your time. And it's been a pleasure to have you as our guest today.
Thanks, Radu. All the best. Much appreciated.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow us on radupalamariu.com/podcast for all the show notes, links, and extra tips covered in the interview. Make sure also to subscribe to our emailing list to get the news in the nick of time. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes or Stitcher and you like what we do, please kindly review and give us 5 stars so we can keep the energy flowing and get more people to find out about our podcast. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me to stay tuned for our latest articles as well as future guests for the podcast. And if you have any suggestions or any other idea, please feel free to write to me. I respond to all. And also, please make sure not to miss our next episode, where we will be having a few other C-level and top leaders in supply chain joining us. Stay tuned.